Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I'm joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. It is 6 days out from the NBA draft lottery, which is going to be a wild day. The odds have drastically changed in case you have not been keeping up on that and you just don't talk about or look up draft stuff until it gets to around that time. The odds have drastically shifted, and that is why instead of talking about this in June, we are today primarily going to just be talking about Zion Williamson and Ja Morant, what we think about them in Phoenix, because they are the two top prospects for a lot of people. I am not one of those people. I don't know if you are yet, but we'll find out when we talk about it. And we want to talk about it today because the Suns only have a 27% chance is what it is, 26% chance
top two
of getting a top two pick. Those odds are way lower. You used to, if you finished around that spot, it was way higher. It was like 30, 35, 40%, somewhere around there. Not the case anymore. So we are going to talk about those two in depth today and kind of just our overall thoughts on them, because this could be the last time we talk about them. And if not, then we will get more in depth on it in the coming episodes, obviously, but just seemed like a good kind of launching off point into the lottery and what the impact of falling certain spots and not getting a top two pick would be.
Basically, what we're trying to say is this is our last chance to talk about Zion Williamson. There's an 86% chance he's not on the Suns' radar come next Tuesday. So here we are, and I think a good jumping off point would be just to say I have not seen any big board or mock draft or anything that has Ja Morant going number one over Zion Williamson. Now, ESPN's John Barry this week said on our airwaves that he would consider trading down and the Suns picking Morant, which is like making a bunch of assumptions. And it's also kind of saying like he would consider dealing the number one pick, basically, if he was the Suns. Now, that partially is about need, but also there'd have to be a lot of things that go right. I don't even think that's a plausible thing, to be honest. Of course, you always want to listen if someone sends you a crazy trade package. If it's like you could trade down to some like number two, get Ja Morant, and you could get like Drew Holiday, like that's an extreme.
Yeah.
To teach Ja Morant, then like, yeah, but that doesn't seem like something to do. Now, if it's for Zion, like that's what you ask. Like you get a proven all-star caliber player and a guy who could be an all-star in the future. That's, I think, what John Barry was trying to say. But let's just talk about it straight up. Like, yeah, there's no way you take Ja Morant or RJ Barrett or anyone else over Zion Williamson. Agree?
I agree. In my time not covering the draft, but following the draft to such an extent to which I can keep track of when the last time there was a consensus number one overall pick, I think you can argue 2016 and 2017, but there was a lot of Brandon Ingram number one buzz. I was one of those people. It's embarrassing. We can move on from it. Markelle Fultz, I think there was a lot of Lonzo stuff there, and there was a lot of more so like Markelle's actually in this group of four to five guys that we're not sure. There was some perhaps 2013 buzz there where it's like Anthony Bennett in a good way. Obviously, that was like, oh God, who's the number one pick? But that one was far
there was
more
some Alex Len buzz in that one too.
Yeah, so you have to go back to 2015. I think that's Karl Anthony Towns. He was without a doubt the number one guy, and then 2013, we didn't even have one. So now you're just going back to 2012 and Anthony Davis. So I think it's the third time in whatever that is, six, seven drafts that we've had.
It's been that long.
A guy like this, and it's we act like it's a normal thing. It's really not. On Zion, I think my favorite thing about him is that he is someone who projects to... So someone like D'Angelo Russell or Markelle Fultz or any of these guys who go in the top spots, they have to grow into their role. They have to grow into being a super... DeAndre Ayton has to grow into being a dominant offensive, defensive big man, whatever it is. Luka Doncic is kind of one of the examples, and Trey in the second half of the season, where these guys kind of played those roles this season as a rookie. That just rarely ever happens, but... The special thing about Zion is that for his role of, which is essentially going to be a superstar role player unless he really, really grows, not grows, but just, I guess grows is the right way to put it, but I'm just trying to say that there's some work to be done on his end, and we just kind of have to see how his slashing works in the NBA. I'm just not exactly sure how it's going to work, but bar none, he's going to be a superstar role player with the way that he plays defense, with the way that he just has energy and makes energy plays, and how active he is all over the court with his extra leap of athleticism, and just he's 2 to 3 levels above anyone else that we've seen since LeBron, essentially. I think it's him and LeBron are alone on that. And I was talking about Giannis with a coworker the other day, and the thing about Giannis is if he was just 20% less strong, fast, long, and all that stuff, he would just be an average NBA player. I don't even know if there's an argument there that if you just decrease his athleticism and everything that goes along with it, strength, speed, length, all that stuff, that he's actually just a good player, or maybe he's even not a good player when you go down there far enough. It's far more about his athleticism package and his skill, at least in my opinion.
He'd be a worse Ben Simmons, even.
He'd be a worse... That's a really good way of putting it, yeah. Because he just dominates in the paint, because you just can't stop him. He's such a huge force, and I think Zion is in that same way for what he does. What Giannis does is get to the rim and shoot 90% at the rim or whatever, and have the most 2-point field goals and dunks or ever for whatever records he was setting. And for Zion, that goes into all of the things that he does, which is the energy plays, the rebounding, the defense, the slashing, and all that kind of stuff. And that is where the starting off point for me is that you don't have to worry about getting him the ball at all. That is never going to have to be a worry with him pretty much ever. I mean, unless he just turns into this LeBron-esque playmaker, there's no one else to really compare him to. Ben Simmons, I guess. If he turns into a Ben Simmons, LeBron-type playmaker, maybe that's when you really need to have him get the ball all the time. But you don't need him to get the ball. And I think this is where we can kind of talk about shooting, is that you don't have to worry about shooting for him, because if you close out on him and you give him that amount of space, he is just going to take that space, and now all of a sudden he's 8 feet from the hoop in about a second. He's so fast. I think if any part of his, back to the Giannis comparison, if any part of his athleticism fell off just a little bit, like if he was a little bit slower, but everything just checks there.
I think if you go look at, Mina Kimes wrote a really cool profile on him about just kind of, he's a really thoughtful dude and he's a really good teammate. And you could see, like, people always just put his highlight mixes together, but the ridiculous times he used that athleticism was like running out at a corner shooter and blocking a shot when he jumps from like 15 feet away and jumping or blocking the shot that's like 5 feet off the guy's fingertips on the release. Like, that's the ridiculous stuff. It's like, oh, that's a... Like, I don't know how he did that, but it's also that he tried to do that. And, like, when you look at DeAndre Ayton, for example, you see him stand around. We complained about this when he was coming in. Like, it's like, dude, you're so athletic, you could block that shot, and he just didn't know it. Zion is trying to get to every shot and trying to do those ridiculous things and knowing how to use that athleticism. And I think another thing I read today was about Kyle Lowry, all the not box score things he does, by I think Kevin Arnovitz wrote it. That's Zion, like, as a point guard. Like, he's just doing all these little things, and people just get caught up on the athleticism and how unique he looks. So I think, to me, that's why when you talk about growth and how Fultz and them had to, like, or have, he has to find out how to grow into all the, put his talents together into a winning player, like, Zion has that already, and Zion has the skill set.
The moment we keep coming back to is the first game, because that was the eye test of not only is he far, far, far superior athletically, like we saw in the high school stuff, and we need to see it translate in at least the college game. It was just seeing him, oh, block, oh, he's grabbing the ball and going, oh, that's a ridiculous bounce pass. And it's just seeing all of that come together, and not only parts of his game that require him to read the floor, like you said, but actually execute skill-wise. I think he's got a lot of skill. I think he's getting exaggerated a bit in terms of how much skill he has, and kind of, I don't know if we want to go into this part of the conversation right away, but I believe there's a kind of a mystique around these types of guys where people just believe that Zion's going to shoot because these guys that are at this level always learn how to shoot, and there's kind of stuff like that where the Ben Simmons argument kind of came in, well, oh, he'll play defense, and it's turns out he would play defense. Those people were right, but he was garbage at LSU. He was terrible.
Yeah.
Didn't care at all. And then there was also Ben Simmons, oh, he's going to shoot. He's going to at least like develop a 15-footer. And it's like, oh, no, he is not doing that right now. And maybe he will in due time, but for now he isn't. And that's a dangerous part of talking about Zion, in my opinion, and where I kind of want to stray away from the conversation just with what he is right now and what we can realistically expect out of him. But that goes back to the point at the very beginning, which is you can expect so much from him contributing all over the floor that you don't have to worry about. I don't want to call it star upside, because a player like him is a star,
yeah,
but that's where you come back to peak Draymond kind of comparisons, right?
Yeah, and Draymond's not even a great shooter still, but Draymond's going to take a three here and there just to keep defenses honest. And I think Zion already, just his three-point shot is not bad looking.
Mm-hmm.
Form-wise, it's not bad. He's confident, and when you look at his like just splits and efficiency, whether it's a three or just like driving, he doesn't really take shots that are bad shots for him. Like everyone, you can say, are different levels of bad shots. Like Brandon Knight never figured out that's a bad shot for you. It might not be a bad shot for like Kyrie Irving, but Zion doesn't really take bad shots for him. And that's also why, like, I think worst case, he's a really good role player in this league, because he's just his basketball IQ is high. He's just very self-aware of his limitations. And for a guy like playing for Duke especially, and we talk about Coach K always has these guys who are super talented and just struggle to fit in if they're one and dones. He was super great at just he was the number two option, probably, like, as far as I'm just guessing off the top of my head. I should really look, but like, how many shots per game did RJ Barrett have compared to him?
More than him, for
yeah,
sure.
So
I was about to say that it may be one of the best things to happen for him at Duke was the fact that he spent an entire season. That was me sneezing off mic, and now I'm trying to come back into it way too early. I should have taken a couple of seconds there. My voice wasn't ready to talk yet. Now I'm ready to talk. He got to sit alongside and watch RJ go a lot, and that is something that he is probably going to have to deal with depending on what team he gets into. He's probably going to have to be a number two or a number three option, and what did he do? He was freaking outstanding at it. And where we go into this Draymond super role player type of thing is falling into the trap of making it sound like he's a Dragan Bender who averaged like 11 points, 3 rebounds, and 3 assists.
Right.
Zion averaged 23, 9, 2, 2, and 2 and shot 68% from the field.
Yeah.
He is a absolute freak production-wise, too. And that should also be documented, because we can talk about eye test and seeing it, but production and just the raw numbers are unlike anything you've really ever seen before. Did you really have anything else to say in terms of the overall big
picture? I will just say the only thing that I don't... Honestly, the shot doesn't concern me. If there's one thing I had to pick that's a negative, it's an unknown, which is injuries. And that's just because... And I'm glad, like I said at one point, but I'm glad, like I think it was Mike Schmitz or Gavoni, like, wrote it that you don't know how the human body can like shoot 285 pounds through the air so many times and survive like ligaments and stuff. Like, do you have special 285 pound flying ligaments? I don't know how that stuff works, but the fact that his shoe literally exploded 2 minutes into, was it 2 minutes, whatever, at the beginning of a game, and he hyperextended or whatever his knee, just shows, like, I don't know how shoes and or bodies, ligaments can take pounding when you're putting that much pressure on him. So that's like my only non-scientific, completely just guessing, I don't know, that scares me. And like, how good is he if he happened to have a serious knee injury and lost some athleticism?
There's Russ in his 30s concern there, where you're like,
right,
what exactly is this guy if he's not, if he's just 80% of the athlete that he is?
But if he has like 8 productive years in the NBA,
yeah,
then you don't care about that much.
Yeah. The only real nitpicking I have on him is something I mentioned already, which I think his skill is getting a little bit overblown. There were just a few too many drives where he was running right into the defense and just didn't show a great feel for when to pass and when to shoot. But that's probably the thing that I argue the most about with passing, is that there's being able to see the pass. How consistently do you see the pass is more important than how often can you execute a pass when it's there. That's going to go into what we're going to talk about with Ja Morant, because in terms of execution, Ja Morant can throw just about any pass. He's about like an 8.5, 9 out of 10, which is very, very high praise in my opinion. But how often does he actually see the pass when it's there and throw it? That's lower on the list. I think Zion is lower on that list as well. I think he might even be higher.
Yeah,
Ja, I think he actually sees the floor better than Ja, but that's where I have a slight concern, is that if he's only a line drive guy on offense right away, how much productivity can he bring there? I think he's still going to be like a positive from day one, no doubt about that. But if he stalls out there, that's where I maybe start to get just a wee bit concerned about offensive value, but that's just me being super nitpicky. And then he does fall asleep on defense quite a bit and does look to conditioning again, the whole 6'7", 285 thing. There were certainly times where I looked at him not being there on defense because he was tired. And look, he's 18, 19.
Did you see the very sketchy phone video of him throwing a football on a beach recently?
No.
Oh, that was like the thing today.
Did it just escape the universe?
Yeah. It said hotels, like the length of a hotel. He threw a football through the air. He looked kind of fit, is what I'm trying to get at.
Like, he's probably going to be incredibly in shape.
He got in better shape, I think, as the season went on, and even after that knee injury.
Yeah, I wrote about it. We talked about it a little bit already. It would change everything for the Suns to get him. He's that type of prospect. I don't think we need to go in on that.
No, Morant.
Morant. Where do you stand on Ja? Because I've been more out in the conversations than you have.
Yeah, so I'm starting to buy in more to, like, he could actually maybe be a good player off the bat. But
why don't we actually start here really quick? I think it's important to talk about his process as a prospect, because a lot of people just jumped on the hype train when he started showing up on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the most important things to realize with Ja was that him playing at Murray State meant that there was an added value to the times that he would play against elite competition, or not elite competition, but competition that was to his level, because he's going to roast the Ohio Valley Conference. That's what he's going to do. And reading too much into those games would be concerning, so it kind of forces you to read more into the other games. His first big one was at Alabama. He played pretty well. And by pretty well, he had 10 turnovers, but he played pretty well. And I think what we'll get into in a bit is, how much can you blame him for how much they asked him to do? Where you land on how much Murray State asked Ja to do and how much of that was on him taking care of the ball is probably going to tell a lot about where you value him, because there are a lot of people tooting the horn of, he was asked to do everything, absolutely everything. He's going to be better as a defender. He's going to take care of the ball more, yada, yada. The Auburn game was when I was really impressed by him. He had 25, 8, and 7 on only 14 shots, and that's kind of a preview of the Marquette game I'll bring up in a second, where it's like, oh, he can take over a game like that. That's the... I compared it, like, a couple of the reads that he made out of pick and roll in Marquette were just Nash, where it was... you said it too, I think, where it was just...
Yeah,
it was
timing.
Timing, placement of the ball, everything was just him. Then he went through conference play, so nothing really to discuss there, but then he goes into the conference final against Belmont, which is the better team of the two, and puts up 36-7-3, turned the ball over 7 times, but he was 13 of 25 from the field. The Marquette game is the one we'll talk about. He had 16 assists in that game, only took 9 shots, made 5 of them. Yes, he had 7 turnovers as well. And then Florida State, was the big one.
That's the big one.
That's the big one that everyone had circled, including me, because it's like, okay, this is a, in terms of the athletes that are on the floor and the reads that they will make, this is about as close to an NBA level defense that he's going to play all year. What does it look like? And it did not look good.
What were his numbers in that?
8 of 21 from the field, 4 assists, only 2 turnovers.
Yeah.
They were just taking the ball out of his hands a lot, too, and that's I'm not reading super hard into that game, but for the context of bringing this up and everything, it was sort of him moving up and up boards. He was maybe a lottery pick for some people entering the season, and then once the Alabama and Auburn game happened, that's when I started ranking him like 6 or 7. And then once we saw the Belmont game and then the Marquette game was the one where I was like, this guy's probably a top 3, top 4 guy.
The interesting thing with his trajectory just as a recruit in general was, if you didn't know, he was Zion's teammate for a year in high school on an AAU team. Wasn't really recruited. I guess he was found by some Murray State assistant looking for popcorn in an auxiliary gym. And he was like, oh, who's that guy? That guy looks good. And as a freshman, he was not the scorer, and that's the big leap he took. He was like 12 points a game, 13, 7 assists.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then once he takes that leap, like, he was figuring out, I think, this whole season, like, the balance of when to score, especially, like you said, when you're playing OVC teams, you're not getting, you're just scoring. You're taking what defense gives you, but once you face Marquette, Florida State, like, Florida State legitimately was just like, we're putting our really huge lineup, long athletes in the passing lanes, and we're going to meet you at the rim. And if you can shoot, fine. You can take shots. And that's kind of how they played him, and they won because of that. And that's not necessarily showing the negatives with him, but it is showing his limitations and like how much he has to learn, because he hasn't had that much experience as being like the number one option like that. So I think that's important when you talk about him and how he projects, because like he's always been the passer, but the scoring thing is pretty new, and it's just hard to project how much of that weird jumper is going to be effective in the NBA, because if people are guarding it, he's not going to be able to get it off. And so what is, like, a 170-pound dude? He has great handles. He's athletic. We know that. So he's going to have to be more of a passer off the bat, I think. I think that's the biggest key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how much can he stay in the flow of the game without scoring is going to be the most important thing for him. For that Florida State game, in case we get in a situation where we have to cover this and he's second, the Suns get the second pick, basically, I think that would be the only way. I like took a log.
Third, I could say.
Third too. Okay. I took a log of the game against Florida State, and it only lasted until like the 18-minute mark of the second half because the game was over. But these are my play logs in the first half. Gets lost on defense. Great left hand. Dumb decision on drive? ? Dumb strip attempt. Lost, not on corner. Hang in the air dime. No mid-range look, forces post-entry, low pass, LOL showboating, trash defense, not marking corner, trash closeout, dumb lob.
I want to read your scouting reports more.
Great extra pass, quick look. So that was the Florida State game, where it was just far more. He's on the Russell Westbrook spectrum, and everyone thinks that's, when you say that, people think you're making a comparison to like the type of athlete he is and point guard he is. He's on the Russell Westbrook spectrum of, he is going to, in my mind, he is always going to make dumb decisions. Russell Westbrook is always going to take that three. He is always going to make the type of reads that you would expect from them on a high level. But he's just going to have two plays in a row, and then the third one's going to be stupid, and you're just going to have to go off. The example I keep making is, in that Auburn game, he legitimately tried to lob it to himself off the backboard from the three-point line. He legitimately tried to do that. Because
why are you against fun?
I'm just against everything, man, I guess. I don't know. But that is what concerns me the most, is that in the Florida State game specifically, it was just the garbage stood out way more. And I really encourage you, if you honestly are like, wow, is his defense really that bad? If you can find the Florida State game somewhere, just go watch his defense. It was a nightmare. And now it was 2-3 minutes in the game. I'm sorry, he was not tired yet, because it was only right. The second game of the tournament. Of course, the end of the season is long, I know, but I'm talking. That first play was the second, third possession of the game for Florida State. and he just had a number of those. And I think he's even worse than Trey on that end, in my opinion. And that is where, before we get into what we kind of have talked about, what's great about him, but I think the two huge overlying things for me are how consistent can he be as a decision maker, and how passable can he be defensively. And those two things, I'm just too worried about to have him as a no-doubt number two guy.
Even for the Suns' purposes, if you put him next to Devin Booker, I don't know if he knows how to play off the ball. Like, his off-the-ball offense is kind of like what you just said about his defense. And I know that's a lot of it is load, and it's the offense. Like, if you have him moving, I'm sure he's going to be moving if you have to run a play with him off the ball, but that's something he's going to have to learn. So I think when we talk about him being raw, questioning whether he can have an instant impact, how great that impact will be, that's where I get kind of like, eh. But also, like, I kind of, after watching Trey this past year, if you have those handles and that athleticism, which his is greater than Trey, then I think that there's going to be a shot he could actually be better than, I think, off the bat. Defensively, yeah, that's scary.
I agree.
Booker, him backcourt defense, very not good.
Very not good. The whole fit discussion in the draft, I agree that at a certain point, you've got to look past, we need this position. We have this guy at this position already. I think there are certain ways to value it. Obviously, the Suns, if they land at 6 or 7, should not consider Jackson Hayes out of Texas because they have DeAndre Ayton already. But if they have a wing available at 6 or 7, I don't think that anything should stop them just because they're fairly well equipped on that end and have guys like Josh Jackson and TJ Warren. I don't think that should stop them. But I think with fit, you've got to look at stylistically how do they fit at a certain point. And I just don't understand how a ball dominant point guard who, it really looks like he's going to have to go through a year or two of figuring out his decision making and just how to feel out the floor. And I think there's still a ton of star upside left in him, but is this really the situation where he can grow? And I'm actually not sure on this yet. Like, is it actually better for him to come in here and be the third option right away and defer? It probably is.
Yeah.
But then you're wondering, okay, is his passing enough of a plus as the secondary ball handler when he's going to be a disaster on defense?
Get a TJ McConnell or a Corey Joseph or just some starting good defensive shooting point guard and you put Jaw on the bench, is that worse than starting him next to Booker?
Tyler Johnson, same thing.
Yeah, I guess sorry, Tyler.
Yeah, well, draft before free agency, so we just wouldn't know.
I don't know the answer. I'm just thinking out loud here.
I don't know. This is why I say 2 through 4 on my board is super close, because I just...
Right.
I don't know. Right now, I'm just willing to go with the guy that concerns me the most, and Ja concerns me the most out of those three guys, and it should be RJ Barrett, according to everyone, because of his tunnel vision and stuff, but I think he's got point guard stock.
Okay.
And I'm not saying Ja doesn't, but it's...
Ja has a lot of Brandon Jennings potential here.
Ooh. There it is.
He's like a right-handed...
trying to find it.
Like, just body type. And, like, if you watch Brandon... I'm an Arizona guy, so he was going to Arizona. So I just think of Ja, like... all of Ja's highlights are like Brandon Jennings in high school, where it's like, this guy's going to go to the NBA because he's just so naturally gifted. And then today I saw Brandon Jennings on a TMZ video being like, I still can play basketball. I'm 29. It's like, are you sure, man? That's kind of like... I think Jaw's high ceiling, really low floor.
One question I want to pose before we go out is I want to look at like the point guards that have been drafted in the top 10 in the last couple of years and figure out like where is he for these guys.
Okay.
So Kyrie, I'm starting in 2011.
So we say above or below?
No, just like, does he compare it all to Kyrie? I think Kyrie
handles.
Plays at his own. Yeah, handles, I guess, but Kyrie's, they're way better and he plays at his own speed.
Yeah.
Jaw plays at his own speed, but it's over the meter. You can't register the speed. Brandon Knight, Kemba Walker, I don't really see that too much. And this is not, again, to be clear, this is not me trying to dock him or anything. I'm just trying to figure out what he is, because I'm still trying to figure it out for myself.
Yeah.
Dame?
Maybe a little.
Maybe in terms of demeanor, I can see it, which is a plus, obviously.
Yeah.
He certainly has that swagger about him. He called himself the point god.
Yeah.
With Chris Haynes, which, hey, good
he's
for you.
Like, he's like the weird, humble, but very confident guy. Like, he's actually pretty... I think I like him as a, like, demeanor guy, yeah.
Trey Burke?
I'm just gonna laugh.
Okay. Dante Exum, no.
No.
Marcus Smart, no.
No.
Elfrid Payton.
Pick and roll game.
On the spectrum of pick and roll, value as a passer, not very good on defense at all, and doesn't score that much.
You hope his shot is better.
For Elfrid. Elfrid doesn't score much. Ja does. But that's the question, is how long does it take him to figure out scoring? I think D'Lo's extremely interesting. I think that's the closest I've gotten in terms of looking at all these names, and I think D'Angelo Russell is... Ja's a better passer and sees more.
Yeah.
But D'Lo is an underrated passer. Better scorer, though.
And D'Lo is a more pure scorer.
Yes.
Yeah.
The pure... I'm glad you said pure scoring, because the pure scoring for Ja, I'm just not sure.
It's the shot. It's low release. I don't know if he can get it off type stuff.
The off the dribble, which is obviously so huge. No Chris Dunn there. Jamal Murray? That's, again, the pure score argument, though. Like, Jamal is just a... Like, he is a pure scorer. He's bad sometimes, but he's a pure scorer.
Just mentality-wise?
Yeah.
I like both of them.
Ja, the better passer, obviously.
Yeah.
And then we're in 2017, which is, like, their baby still. So, can't even talk about them, but... I'm glad we ran through that, because I kind of covered... D'Lo's interesting. I think that's my hesitation, maybe. Is that he needs to be... the type of scorer that D'Lo was out of college.
Mm-hmm.
D'Lo was nasty at Ohio State. He was nasty.
And people still undervalue D'Lo because of, I guess, his on-point guardiness.
Hashtag points, hashtag field goal percentage.
Yeah.
Hashtag true shooting percentage. Yeah. Where do you go if the Suns are number two? Do you take Ja?
Ooh, I think so. I like him a lot as a prospect. It's just, I don't know how he fits. But I have the same fit issues about RJ Barrett. I don't know how RJ Barrett, with all those wings, slots in. You could say he plays point guard, and then Mikal and him are basically taking on defensive assignments for Book. So that would be my argument, but those two guys are actually pretty close in my mind, I think.
I don't know. Any more time, but this could be the only time, because the next episode we're doing...
Wow,
cliffhanger. I would need the actual interviews. I think, like, I don't think I've ever said that about a draft prospect before, but I would actually need to be in the room for his interviews with the Suns and see how he responds to certain things, like... How much do you care about defense?
Yeah.
He would have to really endorse playing behind Booker on the pecking order and of the usage percentage and coming in defensively.
Yeah.
Which he could. Again, that's the beauty of defense. I've talked about this all the time in the past year or two. I learned a lot from the Ben Simmons thing. Sometimes you have to just look at the athleticism, size, and all that, and he has the size to defend well and the quickness.
Needs to put on some pounds.
Needs to. I said that about De'Aaron Fox, too, and then ranked him like 10th because of it. And
yeah, that's true.
Thought way too hard about it. Just really thought too hard on that one, Kel.
I would recommend... Ja was on Chris Haynes' podcast, which is available in video form on YouTube, and you kind of get a better sense of like him as a dude. And I watched the whole thing. He's really quiet, but that was a nice sit-down to kind of get to understand what he's thinking and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. This will be interesting.
If they land two or three, it's going to be an interesting month for me on this podcast. But I hope it comes across in the podcast. I legitimately don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm afraid we come back next podcast and we're talking about like Jackson Hayes. That's what my fear.
I took heat for this and I'm scared that I'm going to say it out loud again. Jackson Hayes. Oh my God. I said I would trade the number two pick for Lonzo on the radio yesterday.
Yikers, as you would say.
Would you do that?
I might. I would want something else, possibly. Just a little extra piece or pick thrown in there or something.
I would do it.
Okay.
And a big percentage of that pie chart is that I still believe in Lonzo a lot, but...
Yeah.
I also, like, believe in that type of player in his third year. He's going to be pretty good, and the Suns would be wise to acquire his basketball talents. All right, we'll be back next week if the Sixers continue looking like the Sixers, like they did in Game 5. Holy smokes, we're going to get Monty Williams next week, it seems like. Don't know if that's going to come on Monday or Tuesday. That would be kind of quite the day for the Suns if they introduce him on Tuesday, the day of the lottery. They are not having an availability for the lottery, so we are going to have to just wait and see on that and see where next week takes us, but we'll be here to discuss it all. We'll talk to you then.